Svambhinamatistabhyam Satrajitam Sattamaha Sayanam Abadhir Lobhat Sapapakshina Jivataha. Evam
thus
bhinna
affected
mati whose mind abhyam by the two of them satrajitam satrajit asattamaha the most wicked Shayanam, sleeping, avadhit, killed, lobhat, out of greed, saha, he, papa, sinful, kshina, diminished, jivataha, whose lifespan. His mind, thus influenced by their advice, wicked Shatadhanva murdered Satrajit in his sleep simply out of greed. In this way, the sinful Shatadhanva shortened his own lifespan.
Purport.
According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the word Ashattama indicates that Shatadhanva was basically evil-minded and a firm hater of Satrajit. As the women of Satrajit's palace screamed and helplessly wept, Shatadhanva took the jewel and left like a butcher after he has killed some animals. When Satyabhama saw her dead father, she was plunged into grief, lamenting, "My father, my father! Oh, I am killed!" She fell unconscious. Purport. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, Satyabhama's anguished feelings and words at the death of her father were prompted by Lord Krishna's pastime potency, Lila Shakti, to prepare for the Lord's violent reaction against Shatadhanva. Queen Satyabhama put her father's corpse in a large vat of oil and went to Hastinapur, where she sorrowfully took Lord Krishna. She told Lord Krishna, who was already aware of the situation, about her father's murder. When Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram heard this news, O King, they exclaimed, "Alas, this is a great tragedy for us." Thus, imitating the ways of human society, they lamented, their eyes brimming with tears. The Supreme Lord returned to his capital with his wife and elder brother. After arriving in Dwaraka, he readied himself to kill Shatadhanva and retrieve the jewel from him. Upon learning that Lord Krishna was preparing to kill him, Shatadhanva was struck with fear. To save his life, he approached Kritavarma and begged him for help. But Kritavarma replied as follows. Kritavarma said, "I dare not offend the Supreme Lords Krishna and Balaram. Indeed, how can one who troubles them expect any good fortune? Kamsa and all of his followers lost both their wealth and their lives because of enmity toward them. And after battling them 17 times, Jarasandha was left without even a chariot." Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami explains that the word Helanam indicates acting against the Lord's will, and that Vrijanam indicates an offense against the Lord's. his appeal refused, Shatadhanva went to Akrura and begged him for protection. But Akrura similarly told him, who would oppose the two personalities of Godhead if he knew their strength? It is the Supreme Lord who creates, maintains, and destroys this universe simply as his pastime. The cosmic creators cannot even understand his purpose, bewildered as they are by his illusory Maya. Purport. The use of the singular Yaha, he who, indicates that the frequent references to the two lords, Krishna and Balaram, do not compromise the firm principle of monotheism expressed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. As explained in many Vedic literatures, the one Supreme Lord expands himself into innumerable forms, yet he remains the one and almighty God. For example, we have this statement in the Brahma Samhita, Adyaitam Achyutam Anadhim Ananta Rupam. The one Supreme Lord is infallible and beginningless, and he expands himself into innumerable manifest forms. Out of regard for the spirit of the Lord's pastimes, in which he expands himself and appears as his own elder brother, Balaram, the Bhagavatam here refers to the two lords. But the bottom line is that there is one Supreme Godhead, one absolute truth, who appears in his original form as Krishna. Translation. As a child of seven, Krishna uprooted an entire mountain and held it aloft as easy as a young boy picks up a mushroom. I offer my obeisances to that Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, whose every deed is amazing. He is the Supreme Soul, the unlimited source and fixed center of all existence.
Om Akyanti Mirandasya Yananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nithananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivashri Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Under the influence of the internal potency, Yoga Maya, Akrura and Kritavarma, two intimate, pure-hearted associates of Dwarkadish, Lord Sri Krishna, and Balaram, they convinced Shatadhanva to kill Maharaj Shatradyat. As we were explaining yesterday, this inconceivable pastime is understood only through the commentaries of the great Acharyas, who are intimately connected through loving service to the Supreme Lord. Even the most basic philosophy of Krishna consciousness can only be understood and revealed by such devotees. What to speak of these very esoteric, confidential pastimes? Sa evaya maya tedya yoga prokta puratana bhakto sima shakacheti rahasyam yetat utamam. In Gita, Krishna tells us that this very confidential secret message can only be understood by my devotees. Save and accept by dedicating our lives in the loving service to Krishna as a person, we cannot understand the true teachings of the Gita. What to speak of the higher subject of Srimad Bhagavatam? So therefore, the transcendental purports that the true acharyas are giving to the Vedic scriptures are equally, and for us, even more important than the original verses, because they reveal the truth of the verse to us. Therefore, amongst Gaudiya Vaishnav society, we find that the great acharyas, they generally will not just translate a Vedic literature without giving commentary. Because we are a preaching movement. And whatever the great devotees do is meant as a compassionate offering of service to the conditioned souls. And what is the use of giving people the Bhagavad Gita without giving them a true understanding of what is being said? What is the use of speaking Srimad Bhagavatam unless we give a people a real grasp of what Bhagavatam is telling us to do? Surrender to Krishna. Surrender to the Supreme Lord as a person. Dhruva Maharaj, Ambarish Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, the Prachetas, Narada, Shukadev. There are so many wonderful stories of great devotees in the Bhagavatam. But in each of them we find they are surrendering to the Absolute Truth as a person. They are praying. They are serving. They are surrendering to a personality, the Supreme Personality, Bhagwan. And unless we approach the Lord in this mood, as a bhakta, we cannot understand the truth. And unless we hear from people who have surrendered to the Lord accordingly, we cannot understand the truth. Factually, there are so many books with commentaries on the Vedic literatures, and many of them, from other points of view, are very brilliant. They give wonderful, wonderful analogies, incredibly precise examples for certain aspects of our philosophy that we have in common. The idea of karma, the idea that we are not this body, but we are the eternal soul. The idea of the miseries of material existence and the absolute nature of God, the necessity to take to spiritual life, the futility of material sense enjoyment. All transcendentalists who are following a respectable path have these things in common. And we find commentators, they will explain all of these particular subjects often very brilliantly. So sometimes the temptation is there that we can get so much wonderful information by which we can use for preaching by reading these books. But the reality of the subject is they can give you no real understanding of the essence underlying the great scriptures. This is not our opinion. This is Krishna's word, bhakto simesha kashyatyam, that only a devotee can understand what I'm saying, and only a devotee can explain it properly. And by reading such books with such commentaries by people who are not surrendering to the Lord as a person, or by hearing from them, there is actually a subtle disturbance that takes place in the growth of our own devotional creeper. Because the vibration of their words, if they are impersonally oriented, the vibration of their words actually, although fascinating our minds, curbs the growth of our devotion. Therefore, it is not that Vaishnavas are sectarian, but we must be very careful to guard and protect this precious Bhakti Lata Bija, devotional creeper, that has so kindly been planted within our heart of hearts. So here we find Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, explaining so simply, according to their realizations, the truth of what and why is happening in this story of Srimad Bhagavatam. It is explained here by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that Shatadanva was an envious and cruel man, and he hated King Shatrajit. So Akrura and Kritavarma, being so disturbed that Satrajit had offended Krishna so bad, he was spreading rumors and trying to disturb the faith of Krishna's devotees by making up lies against him. And sound vibration is so powerful that even lies can contaminate one's consciousness if one hears them submissively. So this subtle contamination that was taking place in some of the Lord's own devotees due to this lying person, it was intolerable for Kritavarma and Akrura. And they felt for his own good and for the good of everyone, he must be killed. So they went. They didn't want to do it themselves because they know that this happens to be Krishna's father-in-law, and whoever kills this person is going to be destroyed by Krishna and Balaram, no doubt. So we don't want to be destroyed by him. But this man, he's already evil, he's already cruel, he's basically demoniac, he hates Satyajit, everything is just right. There's no loss if he dies. He deserves it. And if he dies at the hands of Krishna and Balaram, he'll get liberated, so it's actually very nice. So they convinced him. By using so many jugglings of words, they convinced him that he must be killed. So Shatyadanya, such a coward as he was, such a terrorist, when Shatrajit was laying in his palace, sleeping, he quietly approached him and murdered him. And when the ladies of the palace discovered that their king was dead, they began to weep. And when the news reached Satyabhama, the goddess of fortune, you can imagine such a death of her own father. Satyabhama, she began to weep. She fell to the ground unconscious. And she decided that my husband must know about this immediately. Krishna and Balaram at the time were in Hastinapur, trying to oversee the protection of their devotees, the Pandavas. So Satyabhama went all the way from Dwarka to Hastinapur, weeping and crying, telling Krishna and Balaram that Satrajit was dead. And Krishna, who was so kind and loving to all spirit souls, to see the plight of his own wife and to think that his own father-in-law had died, he and Balaram both, they exclaimed, "How terrible this is!" And they began to cry, mourning for the loss of their relative. And it is explained by Shukadeva Goswami that they were appearing just like human beings in the way they responded to this tragedy. When Krishna appears in this earth, he performs his pastimes in such a way that devotees, they can appreciate that the Lord is sentient. In personal calamity, thou hast removed. Sentient Lord, you have proved that we cannot have bhakti. We cannot approach devotional service unless we truly believe and understand that the Lord is a person. He is a sentient person, but he is the supreme person. Brahma Samhita explains that the Lord has senses, but each one of his senses can perform unlimitedly the functions of every one of the senses. The Lord has eyes, but his eyes can see everything, everywhere, and everyone. The Lord has ears, but his ears can hear everything, everywhere, from everyone. The Lord has hands, and he can accept any offering from anyone, at any time, anywhere. This is the nature of the transcendental body of the Lord. Satchidananda Vigraha. And not only that, Brahma Samhita explains that any one of his senses can do any of the functions of the other senses. With his eyes, he can hear everything that's taking place in all the spiritual and material creations. With his glance, he can accept our offerings. He can speak through his ears. He can do anything. He is unlimited, achintya, and inconceivable. But he is a person. And he is a person who has transcendental divine feelings. Because if you do not have feelings, you cannot love. And Krishna is the supreme lover of all living beings. And he is the supreme source of loving reciprocation. So therefore, when the Lord appears in this world, and even the Lord's existence in the spiritual world, he displays the pastimes of crying with a sad and mournful heart to see Satyabhama in her condition and to hear of the demise of his father-in-law. And this is very important, to make it very, very evident that, yes, the Lord is a person, and we must deal with him like a person. If you offend his devotees, you will cause him pain. If you serve his devotees nicely, you will cause him great pleasure. This is revealed so clearly through this wonderful incident of his weeping. But of course, we should know that the Lord's weeping was not like the crying of an ordinary mortal being who loses a loved one. Because Krishna, he is not attached to the bodily concept of life. He is reciprocating with the soul in everyone's heart. We should understand that even in our own devotional service, he's not reciprocating with our physical activities. He's reciprocating with our soul. And the soul's energy is the bhakti, the offering. The physical activity is only the way by which the soul is expressing that devotion. But ultimately, Krishna is accepting the offering of the soul, not the physical offering. But in this material world, the soul's ability and facility to express love of God and devotion to the Lord, or the desire to serve, must come through the body and the mind. Patram pushpam palam toyam yomai bhakta prayachtati. Krishna says in Gita that whatever you offer, if it is offered with devotion, I accept it. But it must be offered. The example is, somebody may be thinking that people are offering so many wonderful gifts to Krishna. They are building beautiful temples. They are donating wonderful vans or big, big facilities. What do I have? Better I just think in my heart that I have nothing, so there's no use offering anything, and therefore Krishna will understand. No, not like that. Krishna says you don't have so much, then you must still, with your hand and with your mind, you offer me a leaf. You offer me a little water. But you have to use your body, you have to use your mind in Krishna's service. But Krishna's acceptance is the devotion that impels that offering to be made. The sincerity, the humility, and the desire to please him and please his devotees. Srila Prabhupada explains that the Archamurti of the temple, they are persons. You must feel that if I do not feed Krishna bhoga, he will be hungry. You have to have that understanding. Otherwise you will not offer it with the proper state of mind. If I do not bathe Krishna, he will not feel refreshed on that day. If I'm dressing him and I stab him with a pin, I'm causing him pain. Someone may think, how can a marble body feel pain? But it's not a marble body. Krishna is personally accepting whatever we do through that form and in that form. Therefore, any pain that we would cause another being, if we inflict that upon the deity, Krishna accepts it and he suffers. He suffers for our sake. But his suffering is transcendental. He is Atmarama. He's perfectly blissful and complete in himself. But within that complete blissfulness, he suffers for the benefit of his devotees, to give them the chance to love him and to serve him. And similarly, when we offer nice things, when we fan him, understand that when you're fanning Krishna with the chamara or with the peacock fan, it's not just a ritual. Krishna's hot. He's actually feeling heat, and he wants to be cooled. And when you're fanning him, it should be in a way that the air is making him cool. It shouldn't be in a way that you're just, everyone can see that you're very, in a very fancy, distinguished way, you are moving the fan around. That is not why you're doing it. It's not for your own glorification. Just see how nicely he's moving the chamara. So artistically, that's not why we're doing it. We're doing it because Krishna's hot, and we have to, whatever method best gets nice, cool breeze on Krishna. That's how we do it. This is how all of our deity worship should be. And for those who are just coming into the temple, how we bow down, how we offer our prayers, Krishna's personally reciprocating with us. So we should not make Radha Gopinath cry. We should make them very happy. It is their mercy they come to give us the opportunity to either make them cry or happy. But if we want to make spiritual advancement, we must strive to make them happy. And also, what makes them the most happy is when they see their devotees, they're watching us. They're actually watching us within their hearts wherever we go. But in the temple, they're personally, we can see them looking at us. And how we treat each other, how we love each other, how we dance together, how we sing together, how we listen to class attentively. Understand that during Srimad Bhagavatam class, if you fall asleep, Radha Gopinath's watching you fall asleep. Their eyes never close. They're always watching. And if you're listening attentively, you're giving them pleasure. Oh, just see. He likes to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srinvatam sukata krishna punja sravana kirtana hridyantasto yabadrani vidunoti suritsata. When Krishna sees that you like to hear his glories, he becomes very happy. And he helps you to purify your heart of all these conditionings. So Krishna and Balaram, they decided that the Shatadandva, he must be given the proper reaction to what he has done. We will liberate him from his envious condition. When Shatadandva heard, Shatvadan also stole the Shamantaka jewel from Satrajit after he killed him. When Shatadandva heard that Krishna and Balaram were coming to get him, he became very afraid. Materialistic people, they're so crazy. They do things without thinking ahead of what's going to be the reaction. He didn't consider before he killed Satrajit that Krishna and Balaram, your son-in-law, they're going to come to get me. He was so intoxicated by his envy. He was so bewildered by his mind and senses that he didn't think twice before performing this heinous activity. And Srila Prabhupada explains, this is the difference between Shreyas and Prayas. Shreyas means human mentality, and Prayas means animal mentality. Prayas means whatever your mind and senses immediately are inspired to do or enjoy, you just do it. Just like an animal. If a dog feels the urge for sex, he doesn't think, well, this is not moral. He just goes. If a hog has a desire to eat some stool, he doesn't think, I shouldn't eat between meals. It's not good for my health, and it's not good for my spiritual advancement. He just eats anytime the feeling comes. Similarly, a human being, whatever urges, whether it's an urge of lust or urge of anger or urge of greed or urge to sleep, whatever urge is in our mind or senses, a human being must rationally, with his God-given intelligence, discriminate, is this good for me? What will the result be? It will feel good now, but what will be the reaction in the future? And therefore, a devotee must be very, very strong in his mind and intelligence with the philosophy of Krishna consciousness so that he can rationally analyze every situation before he acts. Srila Prabhupada said, this is the difference between a Godas and a Goswami. They both have urges, often the same urges. A Godas just says, oh, it will feel good, I must do it. He doesn't think what the response will be in the future. But a Goswami will think, oh, this is not what Krishna wants, this is not what Gurudev wants, this will give some negative reaction to my spiritual life, I will not do it. I will say no. So Shatadandva, he was so envious. He didn't think twice. He just went and killed Shatrajit. But sometimes we should know we are envious. We may not kill someone, but we want to kill their reputation with our words to whatever degree we have the capacity. But we should know that if this is a devotee, or even if this is just a common man or woman, if we are speaking against anyone or anything prompted by envy and not service and compassion, we are going to have to suffer a severe reaction. No doubt. So therefore, we should analyze and control our senses and our mind. We have to always be looking in the future. We are living in the present, but we must act in the present in such a way that our future is bright in the eyes of God. So Shatadanva, he went and killed. Now Akrura and Kritavarma, they were looking in the future. They were intelligent devotees. Due to the offense they committed to the gopis of Vrindavan, their minds and intelligence were bewildered to get involved in this whole incomprehensible lila. But nevertheless, they were devotees protected by Krishna. So Shatadanva, when he heard that Krishna and Balaram were coming to kill him, the first thing he did is he ran in complete fear, thinking, what have I done? And he went to Kritavarma and said, you told me to do it. Please help me. And Kritavarma looked at him and said, help you? You're on your own, my friend. Krishna and Balaram are all powerful. They are supremely strong. No one can protect themselves. He said, look at Kamsa. Kamsa was the most powerful Rakshasa in all of the universe. And he had massive armies. And that Kamsa, when Krishna and Balaram were angry with him, they destroyed him. And Jarasandha, one of the most powerful warriors, Kshatriyas, in all the world, he was defeated. He didn't even have a chariot left 17 times by this Krishna and Balaram. And you expect me to help you against them? Rivo. Shatadanva was thinking, what is this? So he ran to Akrura. Akrura, we did this together. You inspired me and told me to do it. Please help me, protect me. Akrura said, protect you? From Krishna and Balaram? I dare not offend the Supreme Lords Krishna and Balaram. Indeed, how can one who troubles them expect any good fortune? Akrura said, who would oppose these two personality of Godhead if they knew their strength? These two Supreme Lords, actually, in the purport it explains that there is one God, but we understand the concept of how the Lord that one Lord expands himself into many forms for the sake of pleasurable pastimes. It says Krishna, he creates, maintains, and destroys the entire universe simply by his pastimes. And even the cosmic creators are bewildered by him due to the illusion of Maya. When he was only 7 years old, he uprooted a massive mountain and lifted it up with the little finger of his left hand for 7 days as a child picks up a mushroom. I offer my obeisances to Krishna, who is the supreme soul and the unlimited source and fixed center of all existence. In other words, Akrura rejected Satyadanva. So what did he do? He placed the jewel in Akrura's hands. You take the jewel, I have to go run for my life. So we should know that anything we do, irreligious, against the will of God, ultimately, you are responsible. Others may have convinced you to do it. Others may have conspired with you to do it. But ultimately, Krishna and or the laws of material nature will see you individually and personally as responsible. You cannot say to Yamaraj that, well, what about the rest of them? They helped me. It's not my fault. Yamaraj will look at you and only you. Through the eyes of the Yamadutas. In the same way, we are responsible. That's why it is said, when the blind lead the blind, they both fall into the ditch. And sometimes Srila Prabhupada and Bhakti Siddhanta and the great acharyas, they would explain that if somebody is misleading people in the name of God, he said, he is going to hell and taking all the followers with him. When you approach the gates of hell and you say, well, actually, he led me. He told me to do this. You're responsible. You followed. When the blind lead the blind, one falls in the ditch, but you fall in the ditch too, and you get hurt just as much, and you're in the same place. There's no excuse. Ignorance is no excuse. So we must be very careful. We must be very discriminate. So Satyadanva was running and fleeing from his life, but ultimately he knew that he was finished. He was dead. Krishna and Balaram were coming. But meanwhile, actually in the next verse it says that Shatadanva's appeal, thus being rejected by Akura also, placed the precious jewel in Akura's hair and fled on a horse that could travel 100,000 yojanas. I'm sorry, 100 yojanas, which means 800 miles. So Shatadanva, after performing his sinful activity, he was going to try, by his material capacity, to escape the reaction. And he was obviously a very specially powerful soul. To have a horse that can run 800 miles. But even if he had a horse that could run 8 million miles, or even if he had a rocket ship that could travel at the speed of light, you cannot escape the wrath of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, nor can you escape the reactions of our karmic activities. You cannot. There is no possible material means by which we can escape our reactions. Durvas Muni, he was far more powerful than Shatadanva. Because of his offense to Maharaj Ambarish, he tried to kill him. He tried to murder Ambarish Maharaj in such a terrible way. He was just standing there unarmed with folded palms. And Durvas Muni created from the hair on his head a demon that was made out of fire that could consume the whole world. Whatever you desire. He was so detached. So Krishna sent his Sudarshan Chakra and destroyed that fiery demon. And then the Sudarshan Chakra, it began to chase after Durvas to give him the reaction for the offense he had committed. And Durvas was a great mystic who had manipulated material powers on such a gross and subtle level that he can do practically anything. He had perfected the 8 mystic siddhis. What type of powers he had that within a second he created a monstrous demon that could devour the whole world. And he began to fly away. He didn't run. He didn't get in a Maruti car that drives so nicely and can take turns so fast. He began to fly. And he didn't fly like these gross, inefficient Cessna airplanes that can fly from Bombay to London in 4 hours. Is that what they're called? Cessna? Something like that. He was flying to other planets within seconds. Within 1 year, he went to Indraloka, to Brahmaloka, to Shivaloka. He went beyond the material sky to Vaikunthaloka. But he couldn't run from the reaction to his sinful activities. It was always chasing right behind him. There is only one way possible to be relieved of any sin that we have committed without having to suffer. Sarvadharman purityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha ishyami masajaha. To surrender to Krishna. Now Satyadanya, he didn't think of surrendering to Krishna. He was only thinking of running away. This is the condition of materialistic society. They have committed so many sins, and they want by their material powers or influence to escape the reaction. But a devotee understands that, yes, I am so sinful, I have done so much in the past, and there is no power that I have, not with my money, not with my influence, not with my physical strength, not with my intelligence, can I even relieve myself of a single trace of my previous sins? Only if I surrender to Krishna. By becoming his humble servant and chanting his holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. And ultimately you surrender to Krishna one way or the other. Shatadanva surrendered to Krishna ultimately, but it was trying to fight against him. He surrendered to Krishna, who appeared in the form of death. But devotees, they surrendered to Krishna with love. Krishna, I'm yours. Do what you like with me. Whatever punishment I deserve, give it to me, Krishna. Let me suffer anything. I have done so wrong. But let me be your servant. And let me never displease you again. Give me your loving devotional service. That is my only desire. Is there any questions? Shyamananda Prabhu. Shyamananda.
It is mentioned in the scriptures that if somebody eats meat, then one who kills it, one who cooks it, one who purchases it, they all suffer the same reaction. So here we find that one person has committed murder, and the other two who are abetting the murder, they are washing their hands clean. So how do we understand it?
Because they were surrendered to Krishna. Even if you ate so much meat in your life and you have so many cow hairs to take births for, once you surrender to Krishna, you're relieved. Kritavarma and Akrura were surrendered souls to Krishna. They were acting out of surrender, actually. They were under the influence of Yogamaya, but still, they had to suffer minimally. They were in great anxiety, as it is explained here. They both fled. They both left, more or less hiding. So they had some minimal reaction, because they actually did it all in devotion to Krishna. Shatadanva did it out of envy. He wasn't thinking this will please the Lord. Kritavarma and Akrura were thinking that because he offended the Lord, we can't tolerate it. It must be done. They had no right to do it like this. Therefore, they had to suffer. But because their internal purpose was in devotion, the suffering was minimal. And ultimately, as we read in the future pages, Akrura and Krishna remained best of friends in pure, intimate, loving relationship with one another. So don't think you can be like Akrura and Kritavarma. Unless you have such a relationship with Krishna, you should just do everything nicely and be very fearful to transgress any of the laws of God or nature.
Maharaj, is it wrong to be attached to the deities in the sense like, by your mercy we've all come to Radha Gopinath Mandir, but when we go to the other temples, you know, there's a subtle comparison where we feel that, the deities here are more beautiful. So is it wrong, Maharaj, that consciousness?
It's very nice. It's wrong to think that the other deities are not beautiful. But if you think Radha Gopinath is the most beautiful, you are right, because they are. For us, they are. Krishna is a person, and he's reciprocating with his devotee in such a way that for his devotee, he's best in the form that the devotee is worshiping. The gopis knew that Krishna, the king of Dwarka, was still their beloved Lord when they met him in Kurukshetra. But still, they were wishing to see him again in Vrindavan. So we may go to so many temples and see the beauty of Radha and Krishna, but it is natural that we want to see that beauty that is appearing at Radha Gopinath temple. That is the nature of Krishna's mercy, that you're serving him in this form, and he's revealing his beauty and giving you a loving attachment to him in this form. And you should be grateful for that.
Maharaj, you were saying that verse, Evayam Maya Tedya.
When I'm at New Vrindavan, standing before Radha Vrindavan Chandra, who are so beautiful, those deities. Prabhupada once said they were the most beautiful deities. And I worshipped them for some years, and I really felt they were the most beautiful and most merciful, even to a demon like me. How such ugly eyes like mine can see beauty anywhere is only by Krishna's causeless mercy. But now when I'm there at New Vrindavan, standing before Radha Vrindavan Chandra, I feel intense separation from Radha Gopinath. So what can I say? I am also like you. But it is Radha Gopinath's mercy. I feel happiest remembering Radha Gopinath and their devotees.
Maharaji was saying, Sa evayam mada maya tedya yoga prokta puratana. Bhakto si me sakha cheti. This sakha is mainly because he's talking to Arjun, because we all devotees, right? That sakha is mainly because he is having the sakha relationship with Arjun.
Prabhupada emphasizes bhaktosi. We may not be sakha, but we can be bhakta. And if you are a sincere bhakta, you also become the dear friend of the Lord. Because you are my devotee and my friend. Arjuna was devotee and friend. But anyone who approaches Krishna following in the footsteps of Arjuna becomes the Lord's devotee and friend. And how did Arjuna approach Krishna? Param Brahma Param Dhamma Pavitramitam Uttamam Pratyakshavagamam Dharmam Shushukam Karatam Avyayam Ahustvam Rishaya Sarve Devarshir Naradastata Asito Devalovyasa Swayam Chaiva Bhavishime. That Krishna, you are the supreme Brahman. You are the supreme purifier. You are the supreme abode and resting place. You are the supreme pure. I surrender to you. And this is the opinion of all the great rishis and all the great saints and all the great acharyas. So I will do whatever you say. I am your devotee. If we follow in the footsteps of Arjuna, then we become bhaktas. And only in this way can we understand Krishna. And only if we hear Krishna conscious teachings from someone or from people who are following in the footsteps of Arjuna and have become bhaktas, devotees to the personality of Godhead, can we approach the true understanding of the Gita.
There is a tendency that, you know, after hearing about this plot between Akrur and Kritavarma, I mean, even though of course they are eternally liberated souls, there is a tendency to become slightly biased. In the sense that this is not what someone would generally expect, you know, of such elevated souls, because it's quite a ghastly, you know, plot.
Yes. But you have to understand that they're Kshatriyas. And, you know, Kritavarma just came out of the battle at Kurukshetra. They are Kshatriyas. And in this Leela, Krishna is also a Kshatriya. Dwarka Leela. Therefore, to understand the beauty and the sweetness of the love of these Agrove devotees, we must put all emphasis on the explanations that are given in the purports. The translations alone, unless we are self-realized souls, will make us biased and bewildered. But the commentaries bring everything back to its real, true nature. It actually increases when we read these the purport by Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti. It actually increases our appreciation of the sweetness and the love and the dedication of Kritavarma and Akrura. And it also gives us an appreciation of the power of the gopis. How they were just simple little village girls. They didn't have big strong bodies. They didn't have any mystic powers to put curses on anyone. They milked the cows, and they churned butter, and they cooked, and they cleaned. They were just village girls, gopis. Yet because of their pure love for Krishna, they had so much power that even these big, huge, powerful, dynamic Kshatriyas they were practically ruined by the strength of the devotion of the gopis. Akrura was utterly defeated by the gopis, and they didn't even raise a finger against him. Because he offended them. But he offended them trying to serve Krishna. It was a necessary offense. So therefore, he had to get the reaction, but at the same time, he was ultimately protected. So we must appreciate the story according to this understanding. And it also gives us an appreciation of the verse, Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Vigyena Bujai, that when we're speaking about not just an ordinary Vaishnav, but a Paramhamsa Vaishnav, it's very difficult to understand their minds. But ultimately Krishna reveals everything in the end.
Maharaj, I'm sorry to ask you this question directly, but it is disturbing me a lot that in the beginning of the class you said that unless and until we don't hear this philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam by the authorized sources and through the parampara, we'll not be able to understand it in a proper way. Now, there are many persons who are giving Srimad Bhagavatam class plus Ramayan class, and lakhs of people, they come to go and listen to him. Now, my knowledge goes, as far as I know it, that it is not going through a parampara. We know it. I can understand that. But now, what is the faith of those devotees who are spending hours and hours and hours, 8 to 10 days sitting in that Bhagavatam or a Ramayan class for 7-8 days in Bhagavat Saptas, and listening to it very seriously? What is the fate of those people who are sitting and listening to them? And what is the fate of those person who is speaking also? Because there is no way that they can come out and they can get a proper way, or there is something wrong with that altogether?
It depends on who is speaking. If the person is a Mayavadi in heart, then by hearing from them, is disturbing any possibility that real bhakti will be able to grow in our heart in this life. If the person is not really a Mayavadi, but basically just a pious person, but he's not really a devotee who's accepting the personality of Godhead and aspiring to surrender to the personality of Godhead, then you can get some piety, but you cannot get the understanding of devotional service from anyone but a devotee. Bhakti can only come from a bhakta. Therefore, we don't criticize, we are simply not interested in anything but bhakti. Therefore, we only want to go where the bhakti is, and therefore where a bhakta is. The problem here in India is the final conclusion of so many people who speak isn't bhakti. They'll preach about bhakti for hours and days and weeks on end, but their ultimate conclusion is to become God. Through the process of bhakti, you become God. Just like we recently heard, that yes, by practicing bhakti, you can meet that little blue boy Krishna. But why is he blue? He's blue because his blueness is meant to take you beyond himself and merge into the all-pervading blueness of the sky. So although they may be speaking bhakti, this is what their ultimate conclusion is. That we're doing bhakti to Ram or to Krishna because it purifies ourselves, and they are divine beings, but they're only temporary manifestations of divinity. The absolute divinity is the impersonal Brahman. But bhakti is a way of merging into the impersonal Brahman for the common people. This is the conclusion of many. That means they're not bhaktas. They may call themselves bhaktas, but a bhakta is one who accepts jivara swarupoi krishnara nityadas, that we are eternally the servants of the Lord. And you cannot get real bhakti except from one who accepts that I am eternally the servant of the Lord. And our goal is not the impersonal Brahmajyoti, our goal is Vaikuntha, where we will go on eternally serving the Lord with love. For one who has that conclusion, for one who has that aspiration, and for one who is repeating the words of the previous acharyas who have had those realizations, those people can give us the true priceless gift of bhakti. No one else can. These days it's hard to know who's who. So it's best, with all respect for everyone, offering our pranams to every living entity, but to hear from those who we know are truly bhaktas, devotees, who are accepting the position of eternal servitorship to the Lord. We can love everyone and respect everyone, but we want to get our spiritual information and our inspiration from those who can give us love of God, devotion. For those who have devotion, for those who are messengers of real devotion. To listen, for a devotee to listen to those, there's a subtle disturbance of our own bhakti. Because we may hear words that we like to hear very much, but within those words is the desire to become God. And it awakens that anarta within our heart. Because that's the problem we all have. We want to be God. We want to give up the desire to be the enjoyer and the controller. We want to be the servant. So we don't want those subtle influences feeding that ego within us. And for the common people, no doubt, it's very pious. It's very much in the mode of goodness. It's religious. It falls within this scale or within the realm of artha, dhamma, kama, moksha. Dhamma means artha, kama, dhamma, moksha. Religiosity. It's the act of religiosity. It's pious. It makes us more moral. It gives us some appreciation of the divine. So it's not that we discourage people from going. But if we want bhakti, we will not get it, except from a bhakta. Huh? Because most people, if they don't go to those, they'll go to the cinema house, or they'll go to the permit room, or they'll just sit and just talk all nonsense. So better they hear about Krishna or Ram. But best you hear from bhakta. Then you can get real devotion.
I've seen personally that the person who is sitting on the Vyasasan, he used to say some lila and he used to cry. And all the people who are there, lakhs and lakhs of people, they when they listen to it, they also cry. They are so much engrossed in that lila. And when we see it, we feel it, oh, such a high spiritual advancement they are making it. And then when we go out and find it out, as far as the activities are concerned, it's as it was before. So what is practically wrong in it?
Did you ever see a good movie actor?
You go to the movies.
You see that the actor cries, or the actress cries, right?
Did you ever see how tears flow from their face because their loved one died or because their loved one went off with some other woman or something like that? Huh? They cry, they weep. And everyone in the audience is crying and weeping. Everyone. In America, people come out of a movie with tears in their eyes, their handkerchiefs soaked, and they say it was a real tear jerker. Now, somehow or other, the person who was acting was also crying, otherwise they wouldn't be crying. So does that mean they're spiritually advanced? Of course, the subject matter is far more pious when we're talking about the Leela of the Lord. But still, tears which are not based on the principle of eternal servitorship of the Lord, those tears are simply emotional. They're not coming from the soul. They're coming from the mind. And therefore, we do not take it seriously. It's just very excellent entertainment. But we're not concerned with excellent entertainment. We're only concerned with those things which enrich our devotion to the Lord. Of course, if that person truly is a real bhakta, then that is very nice. That is wonderful. But oftentimes, it's not like that. I know some Matajis right here in this temple. They can cry it for anything. The slightest provocation, they cry. And even if there's not a provocation, they cry. Just to get little attention, they cry. So they have this mystic power of making tears come. And they also influence. Then you start thinking, oh my God, what can I do for you? So speakers can also do like this. But we want the tears of the heart, not the tears of the mind. Srila Prabhupada said that those tears which are not based on the true principles of bhakti, those tears wash away the conclusions of the Vedas. We want the tears that water the creeper of devotion within our hearts.
Maharaj, does it mean that the people who are going to listen to such programs, are they being cheated?
It depends on the program. Some programs they're being cheated, some programs they're becoming more pious. They're getting some punya, they're getting some higher consciousness. And some of them they may be getting real bhakti. We cannot just generalize. We have to judge everything by its particular merit.
Coming back to Shatadanya. comparing it to Chaitanya Leela, he got liberated by Krishna. But then there's one developer. That pure unalloyed love for Krishna by getting liberated, because we see Jagai and Madai who were so sinful. But by the mercy of Lord Nityananda, without getting the body destroyed, they became pure unalloyed devotees.
Yes. So, this is a question or?
The question is that Shatadanya, when he got liberated by the Lord this way, does his envious nature get destroyed and he become a pure unalloyed devotee?
No, he gets liberated. He achieves mukti. That's why devotees don't concern themselves so much for mukti. because they know that this is the destination that the demons get when they're killed by the Lord. Mukti means they become freed from all their karma. They become freed from all lust and envy and pride and anger and greed and all of these things. They're put in a very pure spiritual state, but without bhakti, without devotion, without love. So it's a great benediction. They're freed from all their sinful reactions. They're freed from all their bad qualities. They're actually put in a liberated state. But they're not given bhakti. But Putana was special. She got bhakti. Most all the other demons, they got mukti, but Putana got bhakti. Why? Because she, although she came to kill the Lord, she came in a way that she was to serve the Lord. And she actually did serve the Lord. She gave the Lord the milk from her breast. So Krishna, he caused her terrible pain as he was sucking. She was screaming and crying, "Leave me, leave me." Her mind and her senses were in utter agony as Krishna was sucking. And through that pain that she endured, because she was completely fixed in her consciousness on Krishna, as this pain was being inflicted upon her, she became purified of all her bad intentions. And all that was left was that she approached Krishna to serve him like a mother. So she died with that state of consciousness. And thus she was given the position of one of Krishna's nurses, one of the assistants of Mother Yashoda in Goloka Vrindavan. But for the other demons, most all of them, they simply achieved mukti, which is a great, great benediction for them. It's a very high state of spiritual consciousness. But they did not get love of Krishna. They did not get entrance into his lila. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the most merciful, because he gave the most wicked entrance into his lila without even killing their bodies. That is why we are taking shelter of the mercy of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because basically we're all demons. So we need his mercy the most. Namo Mahabharanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gaura Tvaishyam. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Nitai Gaura Premanandi.